now go to that story of a man of God who was allegedly caught in the act.
One stupid mistake.
I've let down a lot of people. That's the bottom line.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings.
The pastor is said to have been found in bed with a woman believed to him.
I've exchanged messages and photos of an explicit nature with about six women over the last 3 years.
There's no question that I've done wrong, and I take full responsibility.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Salam alaikum, peace be with you. We have a crisis on our hands. Infidelity, adultery, fornication, it is rampant. There's a statement attributed to Salahuddin Ayyubi, who says that if you want to destroy a nation, go ahead and make adultery and fornication rampant. And that's what we're seeing today. We're seeing it prevalent all over. It's even affecting the Muslims. And we are supposed to be people at the highest level of morality, keeping it chaste, keeping it real in marriage. So what's the solution? We also have a staggering amount of sisters, women, who are complaining because the imams are not advocating for them to help get them married. And you have men who are more than capable enough financially, physically, to take care of these women. And Islam provides a solution. So we're here with an attorney and a sheikh to talk about this crisis and to offer some solutions. We'll be right back. Back here on the Dean Show, and we have two, not one, but two special guests. We have attorney at law, Ahmed.
Yes.
And we have Sheikh, no stranger to the Dean Show, Mustafa, Dean of Academic Affairs at College of Islam.
California Islamic University.
How long have you been practicing law?
Since 2000.
Since 2000. We have a crisis.
Right.
I was in Florida about a year ago, and a mom came up to me and said, look, you know, there's something you need to talk about. I have sisters coming up to me, and they're telling me there's a lack of Muslim men who are step up. Some of these women are divorced. Some of them have been kind of, you know, put to the side because maybe they have a child, they're divorced, maybe widowed, and nobody's stepping up to marry these women. But there's people from other faith groups who are trying to marry them. What do we do? It's a catastrophe. We also have an epidemic of infidelity, of adultery. We have an attorney, an Islamic scholar. How are we going to solve this issue?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that we really need to look into and say, okay, when it comes to the idea of women not being able to get married, this is a major problem. Late 20s, early 30s, or even late 30s, they get divorced. The way in which the community is dealing with many of these women is they don't want to marry them. And how do you convince people to kind of change their likes or their dislikes or change their culture or something? It's not something easy to do. So one of the things I think we do need to consider, at least explore the possibility, and it's so controversial to even say it. I mean, you bring it up and people are like, oh, I can't believe you said that. One of the things we should consider is there are many women, especially divorced women, women who are unable to get married, they're more likely to marry someone or become someone's second wife than as their only wife. And that's an avenue which we should actually consider exploring. Mm-hmm. The idea of polygyny, or the idea of having a second wife or having a third wife or something like that, which is technically permissible in Islam, but it's something which a lot of people are, it's like a taboo now. You can't even talk about it. You can't bring it up. People start attacking you, Islamophobia, all that stuff.
You know? That's why we have an attorney here to give us some legal advice. Can you even talk about it?
Sure. And from my own experience is that when people are concerned about polygamy or polygyny, especially the idea of getting into that, I don't necessarily think many people, at least not in my community, they're not necessarily as concerned about the law or about their job. They're mostly concerned about their standing in the community, particularly the Muslim community. And there is a stigma associated with it. And I think a lot of times people might say something like, the law of the land or the law that doesn't prevent it. And it's true that bigamy is actually not permitted in any state. It's against the law. It's criminally prescribed. Bigamy is the act of somebody who's married getting married again.
And that is, of course, not permitted under the state law of any state. However, marriage in Islam and marriage as exists under state law are two completely different things in many ways, not merely the fact that you can marry, or a man can marry more than one wife. There are certainly many other aspects to the definition of marriage, how you get married, how you get divorced, that are fundamentally different, and the social purpose behind marriage might be not exactly the same, and so those are also things that you would need to consider. Marriage under state law generally means, and there are going to be some exceptions in some states, but generally means you have to go get a marriage license, and you have to follow a particular type of process for the state to actually bless your marriage, right? For the state to sanction you or say that you're your husband and wife under the law. There are a few states left, very few in the United States, and this is where it might be somewhat of a problem for some Muslims legally. Is that there are some states that recognize common law marriage. Common law marriage is this notion that a man and a woman can live together as husband and wife. They just publicize to the community that, you know, we're married. They don't necessarily get the state's permission, and they would be regarded as being married. And so that's going to be one of the major pitfalls, is that you know, if you have a you're representing to the rest of the world that you're married, and to one person, then you're doing the same thing with another person. In the vast majority of the country, that particular issue isn't going to be relevant, but there might be other potential issues that do come up. One of them, and there are actually many Muslims who practice polygyny. I mean, it's not incredibly common, but it does happen. And I would say that much of the time when it happens secretly. And the reason it does happen secretly is just because of that the social prohibition that exists. A lot of people are just ashamed. A lot of women, in particular, they figure that. They think that their friends might think less of them if they found out that their husband took a second wife, mm-hmm. and those are really things that have to do with the social norms in our own community. We're not necessarily proud of who we are in our deen and our traditions, and we're really so caught up in this particular culture that we don't necessarily realize that culture might be harming us, mm-hmm. and it might be harming our community, and it might be harming a great many women.
Because those women, as I mentioned that example, are you seeing this also, that this is a mercy for women, that uh-huh. women, many people think, okay, this is something with the man, you know, how he's created.
Right. It's just for the sexual gratification of the man, but that's not always the case. There are several benefits for the woman as well. And this is an excellent example that you brought up, something that we're seeing in the community where this can actually be an avenue for many women to actually get married, whereas otherwise they just have to remain single the rest of their lives. And they're just sitting there, and it's not an easy thing to never get married your entire life. Women also have needs. They also have, you know, emotional needs. They have physical needs. And these are going to remain unmet for the rest of their life because something happened, because they went and decided to go to medical school and become a surgeon, and it just took too many years, and now according to their society they're just too old for someone to marry them, and that's it, you're done, you waited till the age of 32, sorry, not likely ever going to get married, remain single for the next 40 years. This is definitely an avenue we should consider.
We're gonna hot topic solution, we're trying to save many people from going in the wrong direction, keep it all pure, keep it the way that's pleasing to the Creator. It's there. Are we going to explore it, talk about it, open up the topic? That's what we're doing here on the Deen Show. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You don't want to miss out. You want to be here every Friday, and then we'll try to give you some short reminders in between. But you can't get that if you're not coming back to the show every week. Fridays, we'll be releasing it, God willing, inshallah. Subscribe right now and enjoy all of the content that we're going to be putting out for you.
Thank you. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Back here on the Dean Show with attorney at law, Ahmed Sheikh Mustafa from the College of Islam. PhD scholar Sheikh Zia, in his book, he talks about, let's go to the other side. He says, you know, why is this? You know, because we see many of the people, I don't know if you want to call them, there's some hypocrisy here.
Let's now go to that story of a man of God who was allegedly caught in the act, pants down. The pastor is said to have been found in bed with a woman believed to be his church member.
I've let down a lot of people. That's the bottom line.
The dirty laundry list goes on. Representative Mark Foley in his questionable messages to a male congressional page. Clinton critic Newt Gingrich admitting he also had extramarital affairs. Even current presidential candidate John McCain has skeletons in his closet. He was still married to his first wife when his relationship with current wife Cindy began.
One stupid mistake.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings with my wife Soda, my children, and my entire family.
I've exchanged messages and photos of an explicit nature with about six women over the last 3 years.
There's no question that I've done wrong, and I take full responsibility.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
I am profoundly sorry for all I have done wrong.
Just 5 months ago, New York Governor Eliot Spitzer was forced to resign after reports of his involvement with a high-end prostitution ring.
They'll try to criticize the Muslim more. Actually, the Muslims are actually more monogamous than anyone out there. People are practicing one form of polygyny, you know, with their mistresses. You know, they'll get up there, they're campaigning, they got their family, even throwing the dog, as he talks about. And then next thing you know, they're in some sexual scandal, right? Yeah. Pornography. You mentioned this, the statistics of if you took all of the
revenue from all of the, you know, Super Bowl, the baseball, all these major sports, it doesn't even come a fraction of what is spent on pornography.
Pornography, yeah. Now he said, why is this? Trying to understand this. He says, however, the reality is very simple, that man is hot wired to be polygamous. Yeah. Okay? And he said if they are not to practice polygamy in this correct, responsible, and ethical sense of the word, they will practice an unethical form, this pornography or adultery form of a serial polygamy involving mistresses and prostitutes. He also goes to back up that there are two books to support this claim, backed by scientific, we're all about now, you know, religion, science has become religion now for some people. He goes backed by scientific studies and analysis. One is Sex in the Dawn, and another, The Origin of Sexuality by Christopher Ryan. And the one we have here, a book he recommends by Dave Parsha, is the Myth of Polygamy. Monogamy. The Myth of Monogamy. Yeah. So basically, there's science now to prove that this is just, women might not understand it, but man is hotwired like this. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, this kind of brings me back to, I read in a book of Tafsir, which is a commentary on the Quran by a scholar named Abdul Majid Daryabadi. He wrote an article about, you know, polygamy or polygyny in Islam and how do we explain it and, you know, why do people have like a negative reaction when it comes up. And he says, whenever you're addressing the issue, you need to ask yourself three questions. The first question is it natural? The second question is it rational? And the third question is it moral or is it ethical? Right? And once you answer these three questions, you can figure out, you know what, should I still have this negative reaction or not? And the first question we're talking about is it natural? So you look at it from two perspectives. The first perspective is a historical perspective. Like you said, the myth of monogamy. If you just look at historical societies, there's this myth that many people have that it's always been monogamous relationships throughout history. And that's just the way it's been. And now all of a sudden, Islam came. And when the Quran came, it all of a sudden instituted this thing about having more than one wife, and no one ever had it before that. That's not the case. You look at ancient Egypt, it was practiced. Ancient Mesopotamia, Assyrian society, it was practiced. Ancient India, it was practiced. Ancient Chinese society, it was practiced. The Incas, the Mayans, every single major society, even the Hebrews, you know, the Israelites, right? It's in the Bible, it's in the Old Testament. You have Abraham having more than one wife simultaneously. You got David, you got Solomon, you got just numerous cases. And people just kind of either don't know this or they just brush it off when it comes across. So when it comes to being natural we have a lot of historical precedent. It's something that's been practiced. When it comes to science and, you know, modern findings and all that, science has shown that this there's this perception among people that men and women are only physically different, but when it comes to psychological and emotional and the way they process their sexual needs and desires and all of that, they're identical. Everything else is socialization. And we just need to undo the socialization and we can solve the problem. But that's not the reality. The reality is, I mean, you just look at it. It's not even difficult to see. Research has shown that men and women's brains are different in the way that they process information. When it comes to sexuality, it's something very similar. You look at men, they spend billions of dollars looking at women who they pay billions of dollars to just to see women with very little clothing on or no clothing on, right? You got Playboy magazine, you got the swimsuit, was Sports Illustrated swimsuit editions, you got strip clubs, you got all these things. What you don't find is you don't find any significant number of women spending any money to see men.
You don't find the opposite.
You don't find the opposite.
Playgirl went out of business with the opportunity.
You just don't find that. I mean, you find a few, you know, women when they go to a strip club or something. They'll go as a whole group. It's kind of like a social thing rather than, it's not so much of an erotic thing. They don't get turned on just by looking at something, just by, you know, thinking about, you know, a naked man or something like that. So they process information differently, and that leads to us having different norms or different ways in which we experience, you know, people in which we get turned on and different needs. So there's the aspect of whether this drive is something natural or not. We can discuss whether it's moral and ethical and all that stuff, but the first thing we need to ask is it natural? It's natural historically, and it's natural, even the drive itself is natural. Then you got to decide to what extent do you have to control it, and if you don't control it, or if you don't find an avenue to manifest it in a pure manner, in a nice manner, what are the ramifications going to be? Ramifications are going to end up being these extramarital relationships. You got websites like AshleyMadison.com, which has millions of subscribers. Now they're trying to push themselves into Asia. They're trying to convince people who are married that, you know what, here's an avenue you can cheat on your spouse with someone else who wants to cheat on their spouse. Sign up to this website, we'll help you hook up. And it's a huge business, and this is a major problem.
So from the Bible, from if you're a Christian or practicing Judaism or any other world religion, from an ethical part of religion or moral part, is there any ground to say that this is forbidden?
So there's actually the Sheikh Mustafa brought up a number of historical examples. Of course, that's absolutely true. It's true the world over. Even in the Americas, all Native American tribes actually were polygynous, right? However, there's one exception, and that's ancient Rome.
There you go.
And exactly. Ancient Rome, and that's a big deal for us. Ancient Rome, you had one official wife. You can have as many mistresses as you want.
Concubines, right?
Yes, absolutely.
There were slaves. That's mistresses today, same thing.
Sure. But there was one official wife who had the status. And then we got into the church. The church, of course, the Romans became very, very important because that's where the church ended up becoming its most powerful. And our legal traditions, as far as this social norm of monogamy, comes from not really Christianity, but from this Roman tradition. And that's what we are dealing with. And so when Muslims are often arguing about how polygamy or polygyny is haram or stuff like that, because I hear these things from people regularly, they're often just they're often dealing with social norms that came to us from Rome, not really from our tradition or practically any other tradition in the world.
So if you take, okay, from one example, this being a blessing, a mercy for women, you have so many women who we gave examples, divorced, widowed, you know, so many men are dying in wars. What are you going to do with all these women, you know? Mm-hmm. What are they going to go towards, you know? They need their needs met also. They need a partner in life. Right. Many end up leaving their deen, their religion. They go up and maybe fall into promiscuity, to fornication, right? You need to eat.
Yep. And that's the second question. So once you answer whether it's natural, you say, is it rational?
Is it rational?
Meaning, does it make sense? Can there be wisdom in that, especially given certain circumstances? It may not be for everyone. Yeah. It's not encouraged for each and every single individual. It may not benefit every man, it may not benefit every woman. But in many cases, or at least in certain cases, it's very rational, it makes sense. Like you said, what do you do when the population is not one-to-one? what's going to end up happening is you got a bunch of people, and generally you'll have higher levels of women populations with wars and all of that, even historically, right? Especially historically, even if you argue in some cases it's not the case or whatever it is, nonetheless, you will have a not exact one-to-one map distribution of male to female. So what do you do in that case? The only other option is you just leave them all unmarried.
Yeah.
And that's a major problem in and of itself.
We're going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be right back with more, God willing, here on The Dean Show.
Subscribe right now and enjoy all of the content that we're going to be putting out for you. Thank you. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.
Back here on The Dean Show, and we're talking about extending the family. Family's good, right?
Yeah,
you want a bigger family? There's some sisters out there who want to be part of your family. What's wrong with making the family bigger? Can we look at it like that?
That's
now you have, for instance, you look at the church. Let's take this example. You know, this celibacy thing for people who are in a certain priest position. We see that there's no sanction for that by God. There could be, but we see what happens when you close that door, the natural way. I'm giving you one example. When someone has made, God has made natural the intimacy between man and woman within marriage. Uh-huh. So now you see some people going towards another means, right? Uh-huh. With these boys, molestation, what right. This criminal act. But now what happens here? You close this door when the science is showing man is hot-wired like this, uh-huh. right? Uh-huh. So now what does he go? He's on Ashley's here. He's like a little rat in a hole, you know, doing some scandalous stuff, uh-huh. you know. These other people are out there, you know, who the hypocrisy there, following this what you say, the Roman culture, where it was like, throw off the responsibility. I have my concubines. I don't have to, you know, fess up and be a man and take her as a wife. It's a lot of load of responsibility.
Right.
What do you think?
I mean, that's a major problem because we live in a very over-sexualized society. You know, you just drive down the street and, you know, they're trying to advertise a can of Coke, and all of a sudden you got a woman with like a bikini on. She's like almost half naked or almost naked. Why? Because they know men are interested in that. And when you go around and that's all you see, and you know, women are this, you know, make excessive makeup, and there's this whole beauty industry and everything, it starts to get to you. And if you're trying to, you know, protect yourself, you're trying to lower your gaze, and it's everywhere, it, you know, not being able to manifest or, you know, have this sexual release is going to have a very detrimental effect, you know, even on your health, on your mental health, on your physical health. And there needs to be avenues where people can do this lawfully. You know, so as Muslims, we always talk about, look, there should be lawful alternatives. You know what? Okay, we can't, you know, we can't go to the nightclubs, we can't party, we can't do, you know, drink and get drunk and all that, certain things. But there should be some avenues to have socialization. There should be some avenues, some halal alternatives, as we say, to be able to, you know, do something which, you know, just fulfill the general needs, like, you know, recreation or socializing, whatever. The same thing happens when it comes to sexual needs. Human beings have sexual needs. If you close this door, right, and if there's another halal door that's there and it can be open and it can actually bring benefit and positive, you know, effects to the family or to the individual or to both individuals, then this is something that we should be very careful before we shut it. And like Ahmed was saying, there's a lot of Muslims who are saying that, you know what, this is prohibited, this is a thing of the past, Muslims better not try and bring this back. And these are Muslims who are even saying this. And that's very problematic, you know, and I understand where they're coming from. They're coming from two perspectives. One is they think that somehow morals have changed, and they're looking at this Roman framework and this, you know, this Western values, and everything's monogamous, we're gonna look bad and things have changed. The other perspective they're afraid is that if you say that, oh, Muslims can do this, they're gonna get in trouble with the law. Now it's against the law. Now we got a major problem. What do? We don't want Muslims, we're not encouraging Muslims to break the law. That's not the case at all. So that's where another variable comes into play. What do American Muslims do, or just Muslims anywhere where it's technically you're not allowed to practice it? Is there still a way to do that? You know?
That's why we got experts here, a scholar, an attorney. Ahmed, what do you think now? You have this dilemma where the person is exploring this option. We see a lot of women also in UK, this is really talked about, and you have women who finish school. They don't want to be full-time wives. They don't want it. They want to be, you know, someone who's not having to be with her husband full-time. And this is something that women are advocating, and they're actually coming. We had, Yasha Bajaz, who came, he said the women are coming to, they're they're pissed off at the imams because they're scared to get out and advocate for these women. But now they're scared that they might get in some, they might have some ramifications.
Right. And part of it isn't necessarily ramifications from the law. Part of it might also be ramifications from because of Islamophobia. And that they might, their name is just going to be dragged into the mud and people are going to say things about them. And because there is a negative perception, the opinion polls find this, polygamy is generally thought of as being far worse than adultery, generally by the American public. So, this of course doesn't make any sense, at least not to me, probably not to you or to Sheikh Mustafa, but it's just out there. And so what we want to do, obviously, is change the perception. And we can't really change the perception until we've done it ourselves for ourselves as a community. As far as how people go about doing it, I do think that many people who do go about polygyny often do it wrong. They do it out of fear. They maybe do it out of fear of their own wife, of their own family, of their own community. And they'll go out in secret, right? They might find two witnesses, they might get an official nikah, but they're going to go out and do it completely secretly. Very likely it'll be somebody who's non-Muslim, who's completely out of everybody's social circles. And those types of things often end up in complete disaster. It's just the nature of that type of thing. It's an incredibly risky type of activity. It's much better to be completely open about it. If you can be. And I think in most every state, it would certainly be the case that you can. In fact, I believe in every single state, you can do it that way, even in the places where you have things like common law marriage. And this happens when you do something called a cohabitation agreement. And a cohabitation agreement is this agreement, a legal agreement. It's not enforced by family courts. Generally, it's enforced in civil courts, but it's been around for several decades, starting in California. So there was this case called Marvin versus Marvin. A man and a woman just have a contract with each other, an oral contract that approximates marriage, or it might approximate the types of terms that you would have in marriage, but you don't actually go out and get this marriage. And it might even have to do with how property is owned. It might have to do with the rights that the spouses have, or the respective rights of the spouses. And you can actually put this stuff in writing, and it's fully enforceable in the courts. And there really isn't a limit to these cohabitation agreements or what you have. Now, it's important to have them in writing. It's possible to do it orally, generally speaking. However, you don't want to be in that situation because you don't have any proof of what the terms were. And so the best way to do this is to have a contract and not get officially married in state court. Now, there are going to be some drawbacks to that necessarily, especially if there are people who are wage earners, they have benefits, health benefits, things like that. How do you actually navigate those sorts of things? I mean, it means probably paying more bills. If you are in fact, if the husband is in fact supporting multiple wives, that's going to be a concern. However, with respect to how property is owned, it's important to have that set up in advance. Another thing is that people get married officially for the first time. I'm in a community property state. Generally speaking, in community property states, everything that you earn through your skill, labor, and effort while you're married, 50% belongs to your wife, 50% belongs to you. You can't really do that and have multiple marriages and be equitable as between various wives. And so you would probably need to not get married in the first place, not officially get married under state law in the first place, or have a postnuptial agreement that clarifies property rights so that you're being equitable with everyone. You also want to make sure that things like inheritance is covered, because unless you have an agreement that specifies things, then you're taking care of other types of ancillary issues like healthcare powers or inheritance. Unless you're actually writing this stuff down, a second wife is a legal stranger, and with somebody who really doesn't have any rights and doesn't really, it's like it's like similar to somebody who just doesn't know you at all.
Yeah.
And so you don't want that situation either. You want to make sure that there's something that exists that's enforceable. A cohabitation agreement specifically exists because people might want to get together and there's some sort of a legal bar towards marriage, or they just don't want to get married. A number of other people don't ever want to get married because they've been divorced before. They've been burned before and the system treated them really badly, and they figure, I'm not going through that system again. I'm going to create my own system. And it's actually okay to do that. It's perfectly fine to find to create your own system. Another reason why people might do it in completely monogamous contexts would be the elderly. For example, people who are much older, they still want to get married, but as we get older and get adult children tend to see their parents getting remarried as a threat. And to address that, they'll not officially get married, and they'll get a cohabitation agreement, which is something that that I've done before as well for people. Yeah. So there are many contexts to this. I would say that if you do want to, if you are looking at something where polygyny is being considered, don't go the official route. That will get you into criminal trouble. It's also a legal nullity. I mean, just if you have a marriage license, you go and get another one, and then you get married the second time, it's annulled. A few other things that do come up is when you marry somebody and you don't tell somebody, you don't actually tell another person that. You don't tell the other wife that there's another marriage, maybe the second marriage wasn't actually official, didn't officially go through. It just, you know, there was paperwork, but the paperwork didn't happen, and the second wife thinks she officially got married, but she didn't, and the guy just deliberately did that or hid that particular fact. Of course, that's bigamy. That would be a crime. But the courts might actually regard that as being a legal marriage as well. So that could complicate things, at least as far as the other spouse is concerned.
Anytime I talk to my mm-hmm. Christian friends, brothers and sisters in humanity, when you go, because the culture today, notice we're talking about marriage, something that the Creator loves, that it's an act of worship, it's something beautiful. We're not talking about boyfriend and girlfriend and, you know, a totally different realm, something foreign here. We're talking about marriage. And when I bring this up to people who are becoming God conscious, you know, and they maybe has the guy's, you know, he's not Muslim, but we get into this area. Mm-hmm. And he's, I talked to some UFC fighters, and you know, they got all the women around them, and usually they end up falling to temptation, they cheat. But when you give them this avenue, and they want to do what's morally right, they want to be right with God, and then they say, man, this makes sense. You know, I like this. You know, if they're keeping it real. Right. Now there's the other guy who's being fake, and now he's like, what a scumbag, this, that, and that. And next thing you know, he's the guy who's caught with the hooker in the car. You right. know what I mean? Right. So, this is something that is pure, that's in marriage, that, you know, even they've done, they've asked, I don't know where I read this word, the mistresses. Would you rather continue to be a mistress, you know, someone off in the woodwork you don't know about, you're forgotten, you know, or would you rather be a wife? You know, that title of being a wife is powerful, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you're being taken care of. Yeah. Women are seeking sugar daddies.
Yeah, there's a lot of women who are in circumstances, you know, I mean, they're in circumstances where they would actually love someone to take care of them. You know, there's this women's liberation, you know, kind of, you can say feminist movement or whatever, that says women, you know, women don't need to be taken care of or something like that. And they start, you know, yelling these statements and all that. And okay, maybe not all of them, but there are several who would love to have a stable working man who is going to be contributing to the not even contributing, but taking care of the entire family. Mm-hmm. Because in Islam, the man is responsible for the family.
Yeah.
It's not like in many, you know, many of my non-Muslim friends, for example, they share rent. You know, even when they're married and the guy contributes 50% of the rent and the woman contributes 50% of the rent. They go out to a restaurant and they split checks, right? In Islam, a man is responsible for taking care of the entire household, financially. And he's got to take care of the family. And there are many women, when they see that, even many Muslims I've come across, especially new Muslims or someone, you know, they've been divorced or whatever it is, they have kids now. You know, they're like, I don't want to work. I have five kids and now I'm divorced or my husband passed away. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm taking care of my kids and at the same time you want me to go work, you know, 3-4 jobs or something like that, just to be able to, you know, give them a basic. They would love to have someone to take care of them. And if it could only be being a second wife, I know dozens of women who would advocate for this, but it's that social stigma that we have.
We got to eliminate that social stigma. Agree, not even thinking about one thing we didn't touch upon as a topic of its own, the children. You having people having relations outside
children
of marriage,
out of wedlock.
What happens there? That's another element we haven't even talked about. In marriage, that, you know, child is
over 50% of children are actually born out of wedlock in many different states.
Yeah.
That's the statistic.
Of course, what I would advocate would be, if I would advocate cohabitation agreements, then that would probably go up. But at least with respect to Islam, they're not illegitimate at all.
Right.
I mean, none of the Sahaba, of course, went down to city hall to get married. That wasn't like a thing.
Yeah.
In fact, even in the Christian tradition, I don't believe the Catholic Church even bothered to register marriages themselves. This is the church, not even the government, until like the 1500s. In the United States, governments actually started to get involved with marriage more aggressively. Primarily, I mean, there were two things going on. One is that they wanted to prevent black people from marrying white people. Right? That was the main thrust of trying to regulate marriage. Another thing that of course happened is the Mormon Church, and that there was a lot of polygamy going on. There were people that were there were church elders that were marrying on a near industrial scale. And the government wanted to try to put a stop to it, and so we have this regime of enforced monogamy, but of course we still have this system now where we have cohabitation. Cohabitation is perfectly legal. Adultery is actually not a crime anymore. It used to be, so that would have been like in some states it's technically still on the books, but even if somebody were to get a halal marriage. But not register it, that could technically be adultery, and of course that's not something we need to worry about. The other thing is freedom of speech, where we have, you know, if I call you my uncle, you know, I can just go around calling you and say that's my uncle, but that doesn't necessarily make you my uncle, or, you know, so just because you're stating to the world that this is your wife, doesn't mean you're going to get arrested for that.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are, so it's actually quite safe if you do it the right way. I think this is all about social stigma. I think it's really just about a culture that needs to be reformed. It has nothing to do with the law.
Okay, we're out of time. We started with this again being a blessing for women, saving women and men to falling into adultery, losing their deen, losing their morality. You think you guys can start? Because there's a lot of women upset with a lot of imams. They're
yeah.
like, they're, I mean, do you have that happening?
We do. We do.
Women.
Have that
these are more women.
Yes, there are women as well. Yes.
Yeah. So what are we going
to
do now?
I think we really need more education in
yeah.
the community.
Education.
Again, what we need to emphasize, and this is like the disclaimer again, it's not for everyone, and it's mainly for responsible men. There are a lot of irresponsible men who are just like, you know. I just have the desires, and I just gotta fulfill it more, and I'm just gonna go ahead and take some more wives. The guy doesn't even have a job. He can't even take care of the first wife properly. You know, so Allah does tell us in the Quran that if you're able to treat them equitably, then you can do this. Otherwise, you stick to one. And if you can't even do that, you should stick to zero, because you shouldn't even get married in the first place, right? So it's very important that we need to have proper education. The people who are responsible, who've shown maturity, they're able to handle it. The women who are also responsible, who are willing to say, you know what, I can handle this as well. I can make sure that we have a stable, you know, family in this type of relationship. The avenue should be open for them. And the people who cannot handle it, we should tell them this is not something you should just jump to. It's not a magic pill. It's not going to solve all your problems. But at the same time, we cannot close the door to those people who are responsible, who can deal with it. And we need to start educating the community and saying, stop closing the door in everyone's face, because this is a potential. It's one of the potential solutions that we could have to these problems of not being able to get married, to these problems of many, you know, women having children and they're not able to find someone to take care of them, it can solve many of these potential problems.
Okay, thank you guys very much. God bless you. JazakAllah khair. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam.
Subscribe right now and enjoy all of the content that we're going to be putting out for you. Thank you. Peace be with you. Assalamu alaikum.